Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. I'm here with Austin, and Austin is a patent specialist, patent attorney. He's got one of those careers that we really don't want to know too much about. We just want someone to help us fix it. So he's going to be sharing some insights and some ways to think about things later in the journey. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Roy.
So tell us a little bit about your journey, first of all. You studied, give us a little brief about how you get to be where you are right now.
Basically, when I started becoming, like when I got into patents, it tended to be something that people fell into. Now it tends to be a career where I'm being asked, hey, I'm going to engineering school, and then I want to go to law school, then I want to become a patent attorney. Because you, at least here in the U.S., you have to be either have an undergrad in science or an undergrad in engineering in order to even sit for the patent bar. Yeah. So basically what happened to me was I was in engineering school and my thesis project was on this invention that I had it was a wireless smoke detection system. And so I explored the patent process as part of that thesis, which I became interested in. I wanted to work at the university because who doesn't want to work at a university? It's a lot of land. It's perfect. It's beautiful. Everything's great. There's no real world there, right? And they're like, no, young man, you must go out and you must learn. And then maybe you can come back. I was applying and the two jobs I was offered, one was a construction company because my background was civil engineering. And the other one was the U.S. Patent Office as a patent examiner. I chose to become a patent examiner. Wow. So I ended up working there 5.5 years, went to law school at night, and then became a patent attorney. So generally at the time, that's how most people got into patents as they fell into it. Now it just seems like something that people are actually targeting from the beginning of their undergrad. So we'll see how that goes. I think all of us attorneys are a little concerned about how AI is going to affect our livelihood.
Yeah, wow, what a big question and conversation that is. I guess we could do a couple of podcasts just on that. And something after my own heart. Where do you see the challenges of AI, A, for your own job, but also for your own career, but also what works and what doesn't work right now?
Well, right now it's still in its infancy and you can tell it's going to get better. But I think the big problem with AI and the way it works, so I've been talking with people and it's the poisoning of AI that I think may be the problem. Because let's just say you're doing plumbing and you have 100 pictures of the proper way a plumbing fixture is supposed to be put in. But say there's 5 bad ones, but somehow they get accepted as okay. AI is going to take that. They're not going to be able to distinguish what's right from wrong. And what you need is shepherds. I call them shepherds. I think we're the last generation that is going to have the experience to be able to point out when AI is wrong. So the problem is going to be is that when we have these young attorneys come up and if they're just constantly using AI or if they're just not even attorneys doing it and it's just AI doing it, you get to that idiocracy concern where the computer says this is what's right, this is what works, and that's it. And the poison pill is in there. And if there's no one in there with the experience to say this is wrong, it's going to be wrong and it's going to manifest even worse results down the road. So that's my concern with AI and the use of it is that you still need people with experience to check it and make sure it's right.
100%. And I think there's such a big piece here on the human, right? It's the human. And I'm speaking to so many people about how do you keep the human in. A lot of people are seeing AI as an 80% tool now and 100% tool in the future. And I don't believe that's the case. I believe right now it's a 60% tool. And you need to, one of the people I spoke to spoke about bookending with AI. And I'd take that one step further. And I'd say club sandwich it, AI at the end, AI in the middle, and AI right at the beginning. Because, the process as we go through this, we have to remain the AI architect, right? We have to remain the voice of leadership. I'm going to remain the thought leader. I want you to be my thought partner, Mr. AI. We're going to follow this process. And you need to know what that process is and the intricacies of it so that you can, not just accept everything that's coming in. So that's a real piece. And I think the companies, or I know the companies that keep AI, as the grinder, the one that comes in and does the menial tasks that we don't want to do, that'll allow us to be more human. That'll allow us to bring the human to the surface. And that'll allow companies that if we're building our company and you have more human in the company, that's really going to stand out from all these companies that are just doing AI.
Yeah, I believe that. I've already had people come up to me and be like, "Hey, I had AI write my application. Can you file it?" And I'm like, "No, I can't, because one, it still needs fixing. Like you said, it's the club sandwich. It's a tool, but it's not the end all be all." And I end up spending more time trying to fix out someone else's work, even if it's AI, than just starting from scratch and writing it. And then there's just other little things that you gain with 25 years of experience in this field that AI just doesn't have. It's like first year law student writing when they try it, and it's, "Hey, after 25 years, you're not to do this and this, or to do XYZ," and it just hasn't figured that out. And that's just where it's at. So I don't know how it's going to work, if you're just going to have models. Some law firm has developed a model and they've done it really well. And the other thing is, I think a lot of AI right now is just, it's people think they're doing AI, but it's early. They're literally just automating a process.
For
You know,
sure.
yeah. True
And I
AI
think,
is.
I think that automating the process, sorry to interrupt, I think that automating the process has been available for 10 or 15 years and people haven't been doing it. Right. And
Yeah.
now, and
You're like,
AI,
now it's
it's
easy.
like, yeah, I think that's it. So we spoke a little bit about, the challenges for AI in your career. And I think we're in such a space coming up that there's going to be just one after the other after the other collapsing. And we have this eighth massive point in the world where we're growing things like the internet and the phone system and the printing press. And as we go through the next year, 2026 is going to be a massive year for this. We're going to see all of that. And in your space, in my space, I can see a lot of what's happening. There's going to be a whole bunch of roles that are created. This AI architect I talk about is one of them. Engineer, automation engineer, virtual chief AI officer, all this kind of stuff is going to come in. And this is the same as when the internet came out and there were no internet engineers. And what do you see in your space that could potentially be useful to you?
I think one of the things that may be useful is prior art searching, because when people do it, they're limited by scope and time. There is no search that's 100%. You can still get a patent. And if your patent is issued, goes forward, and then some other company, and you start suing them, the first thing that they do is they initiate a prior art search, because no search is 100%. The examiner is only searching pretty much the United States. If you hired a search firm, I'm sorry, if it's a US patent, if it's a US attorney, our searchers are generally searching US documents, because that's what the examiners are, and we're trying to get it through the patent office. But we're not searching Korea, and we're not doing all the stuff. So if AI would be able to instantaneously translate or this or that, they may be able to find prior art that was not available before, which may really decrease the number of patents that are allowed, not out of nefarious reasons, just because people have a limited scope. Yeah, there's the patent examiner only has X amount of time that it's allotted for searching and examining the application. So they search a reasonable amount of time. They can't find something, it's allowable. But they're not like going through the archives of the, I always say, like South Korea and stuff like that. They have tons of prior, and they're very innovative, and they have a very robust patent system, but no one really goes and looks over there. Japan's another one. You have a lot of prior art, but it's really hard to look at. You can't read it, so you're like, it's just over there. We're just gonna ignore it.
Let's transition a bit now. For those people that are not quite sure of the difference between copyright, a patent. There's a it's quite a mystical black box art, as it were, to actually understand what do I need? I've got a computer program I've written, or I've got a new thing that I've developed, and I think about patent as really I've built a new mouse, so now I can patent the mouse, and there's restrictions and things on that. So perhaps talk to that for a while.
Patents cover your methods and apparatus for a limited amount of time and give you a monopoly. And in here in the US, and I think even the EU, it's a little bit this way too, the software has taken a hit. It's very hard to patent software here in the United States. And I guess the easiest way to delineate what's patentable and what's not, and this always exceptions, this is not the hard and fast rule, but I would say if a person like Rain Man could do it in their head, taking generic, so you have a generic sensor, gives you some information, you process it through algorithms or compare it to a database and you spit out an output, that's not going to be patentable anymore. Because the Supreme Court here in the United States said that generic sensor is not physical enough to translate that abstract idea into a physical invention. Because what we used to do is just say, hey, it's software that runs on a computer's physical object, so hence it's not abstract. Supreme Court in the Alice decision said, no, that's trickery. We're not going to allow that. So software has had a really hard time. The easiest way to decide if you have a patentable invention here in the United States, one of the ways is if it is possible, granted, it's almost impossible because computers are much more data points, but theoretically possible, if someone could do it in their head, you cannot patent.
Wow.
Okay.
Super interesting.
And so trademarks was another one that we deal with. That's just identification of a source of goods. So what I tell people is what we try to do is we try to get you a federal registration of your trademark because you don't need the federal government, the R with the circle, to give you a trademark. Once you put goods out there for sale and in commerce or services and this kind of stuff with a name, you have a trademark because it's an identification of a source of goods. So what we try to do is we try to register that because it gives it a lot more protection nationally. If you rely on common law, and you sometimes you see with the little TM, that means you're relying on common law type of laws, which means it's geographically sequestered to the effect that you have. In other words, obviously, say you had an In-N-Out. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a burger chain that was normally just in Southern California. They wouldn't have the ability to stop someone in Maine from having a, if they were relying on common law, but they are not, obviously. One of the interesting things is people think about it. There are a lot of companies that don't even have registered trademarks, one of them being American Airlines. Yeah, because the reason is, I assume the reason is because it's descriptive. They would not be able to tell Delta that they can't call themselves an American airline.
I'm with you.
Right.
Yeah, that makes
So
sense.
you can't register descriptive terms. You can't pull things out of the lexicon that other people need to use to properly describe their products. That's the interesting. And when you really think about trademarks, it's there for the protection of the public because we live in a capitalist society. People are making instantaneous decisions on whether to buy something or not. So the idea is that you're actually protecting the public with trademarks than you are for giving the company value. But it does give the company value, it gives it goodwill. So when you walk into a McDonald's in LA or you walk into a McDonald's in New York, you assume the quality is the same. Or you are able to hold it against that company if the quality isn't, if you don't like the quality. So you know whether you like McDonald's or not, regardless of where you go. Now, if someone was infringing that, coming to America is the one I always use. And I guess I'm a little bit too old for a lot of these kids today. But remember, McDowell's was the name of the place, and McDonald's people were always coming after them because say they had a bad experience at McDowell's. People might not delineate that from McDonald's, theoretically. So then they would hold it against McDonald's. That's why it's unfair. This is why we have trademarks. And you can get a registered trademark no matter how long you've already been in business. Obviously, patents, you have to do it at the beginning. You can't disclose your idea. You need to get a patent, file for a patent right away. I had a client had been in business for over 70 years, and we got their trademark registered.
Let's move on to another thing that you may or may not be able to talk to. And that's something that's interesting on the AI space again, that this is one of copyright. Is that something that you're familiar with? Because that just seems to be a total minefield at the moment.
I'm familiar with the arguments. Copyrights generally are the, like, when people call me and they want to do copyrights and books and music and stuff like that, that's generally why it's always entertainment lawyers. So patent people tend to do, there's hard IP and soft IP. Trademarks and copyright are considered soft IP because anyone can do those. But patent attorneys generally also do trademarks as well. Copyright tends to be a little different. That tends to be in the entertainment space. That's when you're dealing with music artists and these kind of things. And like you said, scrubbing the internet for content, that's going to be difficult. And I know that a lot of people are upset that AI is doing it, but the government wants to let them do it because we're not even just competing for better models for commercial purposes. We're trying to go for better models for national defense purposes. And even if we were to, on the Western world, limit our LLMs from learning from material that's on the internet, certain adversaries are doing it anyway. Like, they
Yeah,
don't care if
that's
we
very
do it or
true.
not. So they're afraid that we're hamstringing ourselves by maintaining these copyright rights from the LLMs using it or learning from it. But again, I go back and forth because say it was just a person reading it. They learned it. Are you now in violation of copyright because you've learned information and you've rephrased it and consumed it? You talk to anybody and they talk health stuff and I just read this and now I'm going to do this. That's not copyright infringement. So it's tough. I understand both sides of it.
Wow, yeah, that's a minefield, right? So you just mentioned health
It's
stuff
above
there.
my pay grade. That's someone else.
Yeah, I want to just talk about the health stuff very quickly because that's something that I'm very passionate about. We run our own businesses. It becomes this real piece of that businesses are all. We're in the world. We're solving a problem. We're passionate about it, and we tend to, at some point, if you're not very careful, put our own selves separate and our company first, our product first. And then we have this challenge of not being looking of not looking after our health, not looking after our mental health, not looking after our physical health. And this is so important for your energy, for your production, for your profit, for your client relations, for everything. Talk to me about what your thoughts are on that. Do you have any of your own experiences that maybe gave you some insights? And what do you do for your own health?
I guess that's I so here in the US, I assume same over there, that lawyers can take one of two routes. They can either be that hardcore litigator, they're spending 80 hours a week working and this kind of stuff, or you can move to the other side where you tend to be more transactional and whatnot. When I was young, the idea of success was money. It's money, wealth, this, I'm accumulating. I want that big boat. This is what I want. As I've gotten older, I have my own firm. I'm able to pick my own clients. I'm able to decide the amount of work that I do. Now I just look at it as, am I taken care of? Is my family taken care of? And are we good? My son just graduated high school, but I was trying to be there for every single game of his sporting contest, every little thing that I could possibly do. Because at the end of the, when you really look back at life, you don't ever say, and I believe it, I wish I worked more.
And
This does
then,
have real world effects. We're not rolling in it. There's still, you do have concerns about budgeting and this and that. Whereas if you worked 80 hours a week, you wouldn't. The way I look at it, if you're not making money, you're spending money. So it's kind of like the more free time you have, the more money you need. So that's the way I look at it.
for sure. And then there's this real balance, right? There's this balance. We start our own business because we want that freedom. And I think you've really managed to understand the importance of the family, understand the importance of your own health. But for 70% of businesses, US and UK actually, there's 70% of business owners, small business owners, are close to burnout because the reason that we got into running our own business was freedom. That's the number one freedom. We get into our own business, we do it, we're tackled with some real problems. For the first one is loneliness, Right. Running your own company is super lonely. And people don't realize that. People that aren't doing it don't realize it. Firstly, you start doing it, you're excited, you talk to your family or your friends. And after the third conversation, they really don't want to know anymore. Right. They really don't. Yeah. And then the second thing is that unless you're very careful, the thing that you're going towards to give you freedom becomes your biggest prison. Right. And you
Yes.
end up spending not the 8 hours or 10 hours a day you're spending in the office, you're now spending 14 hours a day in your company, and you're spending the remainder of the day thinking about it and planning and instructing. You can't turn off. Yeah, what is your thoughts or your insights into that?
I talk to clients all the time, and one of the things that we talk about is they're like, "Oh, if I scale up, I'm going to make more money." And it's not linear. Technically, you will make less money per the amount of work that you do, and you've increased the amount of concern that you may have. Now, it may work out that, okay, it just starts running on all six cylinders and then you're fine. But when you scale up, you're actually losing money because now you have capacity that you got to pay for all the time. Now you're worried about making that capacity work all the time. You have loans to pay for that capacity or whatever you're typically doing. Most people don't pay cash for those kind of things. So, I'm like, hey, do you really need to consider the pluses and minuses of this? If you're happy where you're at and you're doing well and you have enough to support your family and this kind of stuff, do you truly want to scale? Now, sometimes if you don't scale, you will lose market share. Your supply, like they're like, we need more product. And if you're not giving it to us, we're going to go find something else that's going to make it work for us. So you might get caught in that, but you need to make that conscious decision about, don't go into it blindly. Things are going gangbusters. I'm going to make all this money, so I'm going to increase my capacity. We see it with businesses all the time. They overexpand too fast and then they collapse.
That talks to my final point, and this is the business operating system. I don't know if you come across EOS or BOS, and the thing that I coach is a business operating system. And the business
Okay.
operating system is what it sounds like. It's a system to operate your business. Yeah, because we end up working so much in the business, we can never work on the business. We get caught in the weeds, we get caught in the muck of it, and we're always just there grinding. And the business operating system is a structured way to grow and scale your company efficiently. If you went to McKinsey's or if you went to some of these big players, they would apply a business operating system. And when I first learned this in 2017, it was a total game changer for me. Yeah, and I grow and scale and build my companies around the business operating system. And the reality is, when I take this into people, first of all, and I start showing them all this, oh my word, what I don't have the time to take 20% of my time off and work on the business. And for me, it was so successful. I was working 14 hours a day, 7 days a week in my companies. Yeah, and after putting the business operating system in, I was actually able to acquire a third company where I didn't spend any time in the first two companies. Yeah, because I had to implement the third company. And then I put the third company into the first two structures and systems. Then I was able to acquire a fourth company, which went horribly wrong and I nearly lost all my, lost everything. Yeah, but that's a whole other story. But the structure, the understanding, the philosophy of these business operating systems, is something that I'm trying to bring to small business owners, because the big players can cost me £100,000 to learn this stuff.
The expensive lessons are the ones you learn
Yeah,
best,
and
right?
that 100,000 was literally just the coach, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
but
Oh, gotcha.
how many thousands I lost before that because I didn't know this, because I couldn't grow, because I couldn't scale, because I couldn't
Right.
understand the core competencies you need to run a business. So it's a real interesting time now that the small business owners have the access to all of this information. And being that we're in the information world, and that information is now free. Right. Yeah. This is the entire shift that we're coming into. How do we
Yep.
make sure we have the right information? How do you make sure you have? I think the idea of coaching and what you're doing in some regards is you're coaching people on how to get their patent. Right. And I wouldn't go to somebody who isn't a patent coach to get a patent. I just wouldn't. And I, at the beginning, didn't understand how business ran. So I just figured it out on my own. If I'd done this in 2002 when I first started my first UK company, I'd be stinking rich by now. Now I'm not stinking rich, but that's more because I spend so much money and living the life I love. But I have the capacity to do that. which is so important to me. I have the freedom out there. I do live the life I live. I'm sitting in Florida at the moment. Last week I was in Seattle. The week before that I was in, a couple of weeks before that I was in Egypt. And then I was in France, and then I was in the UK. Yeah. So that to me is much more valuable than having 50 grand in the bank. Right. So,
Yes,
but yeah, so
exactly.
have you come across the, yeah, what do you do? Let's go a different way. What do you do in your business to make sure the structures operate? Do you have a coach? Do you understand this? Yeah.
Honestly, mine's kind of a small law firm. I guess the I never really read any of these books or how to run business stuff. The one thing I read, it's always stuck out in my mind, was that 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
Tim
I don't know
Ferriss,
if you're
yeah.
familiar with it.
I am, yeah.
And the biggest thing that he said that made sense to me, it, or what he was trying to convey, it's been so long, but basically it's the fear of failure was worse than the actual realization of what failure would really look like. And you should sit down anytime and say, hey, this is the best that can happen, and really give some thought to what is the worst that can really happen. And what you'll realize is that the fear of the unknown of the worst is not nearly as bad as what the worst can happen. And so you need to learn how to run your businesses this way, is that you need to take that risk. You need to trust your people. Like you said, if you have proper systems in place, you can do this. Myself, I've maintained my business to where I can do it anywhere I am. Like you said, you're traveling to Florida. I like to travel a lot of places, and I just bring my laptop. I'm able to get my work done. I'm able to bill my hours. My clients are happy. I'm fortunate enough to work in a business where I don't have to have face-to-face time with my clients.
Amazing. So yeah, that's what a blessing that is, right? What a blessing that is. Yeah.
They don't even
So
want to see my face. That's the way I look at it. You show up
well,
looking like this, they're like, ah, we'll talk on the phone. That's good enough.
you got way more hair than I do, so there's a good contrast here.
Oh, it's making a run, man. It's making a run for the border. I can tell you this. Yeah, but you have a nicer head than I do. I've shaved my head before. It looks like a Klingon. I don't know what I'm going to do when this is done because it's going. Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to wrap up now, and I just wonder, yeah, if anyone is interested in connecting with you, what's the best way to do that?
Probably my website, bondererpatents.com, but it's nice. I'm the only patent attorney, I believe, with Bonderer, Bonderer. So you just put that in and patents, you will find me. I have YouTube channels that you can listen to and get some information on intellectual property, and or you can just contact me directly through the website. Here to help any way I can.
Thank you very much for joining me. I do appreciate the insights.
Thanks a lot, Roy. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers starts with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life that you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.